From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am joined once again by Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello, everybody out there, especially the sugar tits.
Yeah, and, you know, speaking of sugar tits, we are once again, Stu is gone once again. He's had some personal stuff come up. He kind of had to bail at the last minute. He wanted us to apologize to you. It especially hurts that Stu's not here, John.
Yeah, because this is about Australia's, you know, international hero.
It is Australia's international hero, and you know what? He's also the greatest Catholic theologian of our time, Jazz Hands. Motherfucking Mel.
Yeah, that's right, Gilly. But yeah, Mel Gibson's... third film he directed, right?
Fourth film.
Gosh, he is productive.
First one was Man Without a Face.
Right.
Second was Braveheart. I saw it when I was a kid.
Good or bad? I actually borrowed it from the library this week.
When I was a kid, I liked it, but you know, it is a movie kind of for the young adult market.
Right. I know it was based on a book where he dropped the pedo element, or the screenwriter did, and there was a lot of controversy about that. But then a lot of people who like the movie don't like the book. Right. And it's actually hard to find a lot of people who like the book more than the movie, I noticed.
I mean, when I was a kid, I liked it, I thought. But, you know, it is definitely like a young adult story, because it's about a young man who – a boy who encounters this guy whose face has been burned off, played by Mel.
Right.
In that movie. And then he did Braveheart, of course, which is, you know, speaks for itself. Everybody's seen it. And then Passion of the Christ, which was, you know, the most controversial movie of its day and a smash hit at the same time.
Now, let's stop there for a second. Mm. Think about it, because somebody had brought this up, another writer. 10 years ago, like, this was the most controversial film around. Today, the most controversial film this year is Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
What the hell has happened to cinema? It's like the geekening has destroyed us.
The geekening it's ruined cinema. I'm sorry, but like, you know, I liked my geek culture at one time, but it's this paused mutation of geek culture that's just totally infected everything.
It's, you know, mainstreamed, like, to the core, which is crazy.
It's not people milling around looking at comics. It's not the comic book guy from The Simpsons, you know?
Like, right. It's, like, normal people talking about how much they love, you know, Joss Whedon movies.
Yeah, and it's all about inclusiveness and feelings and, you know, and, like, furries and all this stuff. But it kind of makes you long for the days when – because The Passion came out back when – cinema was still relevant culturally.
Yeah.
And this has been a big theme on the Brett Easton Ellis podcast lately, because he's finally conceded that movies don't matter anymore.
No, and they don't.
You know, and I barely go to the movies anymore.
Same here.
You know, I only go, like, you know, I'm obviously Mel Gibson's latest movie, Hacksaw Ridge. I'm going to go see that. I think Mel Gibson's one of our greatest living filmmakers. I'm going to go ahead and just throw that out there. In fact, like, when all this stuff was going down with him, I was not like, I refused to counter signal Mel. Cause I was like, whatever, dude likes to drink and he's fucking nuts and great artists are fucking crazy. Who cares? You
know? Exactly. That's the way I've always viewed it. It's like, he's nuts, but all the really good artists are absolutely crazy. I mean, and he really, yeah, he drinks. Get back.
Yeah. You know? Get back. But even, like, his ex-wife refused to throw him under the bus. She was like, no, he's a good dude. He's just pissed off. You know, whatever.
Well, I had a lot of respect for Jodie Foster because she stuck by him.
Yeah, she did. She refused to, like, a lot of celebrities were, like, jumping on the Mel hate bus.
Right.
and like, was it Winona Ryder was like, he called me an oven dodger.
Oh my gosh.
Which but, I was just like, that's kind of funny.
it's like, yeah, I'd say his father was probably a little out there. And, taking his son to Australia to avoid the Vietnam War seems perfectly normal. But I guess his father was one of the, what do you call them these days, Holocaust revisionist deniers, whatever. And I think that's always been a sort of his cross to bear in the industry.
He's one of those guys who kind of, he's like, attends Latin Catholic mass because the Pope, the John Paul II, who was too progressive for him.
Right. Now, he said that the Vatican II was like the worst thing that ever happened.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
But you look at John Paul II, and, you know, he was one of the key figures in defeating communism.
Yeah.
And, I'm not so sure our Pope today is, you know.
No, our Pope today, he is a frigging commie.
I mean, you know, he avoided the kind of aligning himself with the communist priests in Latin America, but still he feels like one, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard. I resisted it for a long time, but I'm kind of like, you know.
And I don't know if anybody in that area is going to understand the capitalist society in America and why it's beneficial.
No.
It's
and if you're not American,
you don't get it.
And I think, you know, largely, and I say this as a Catholic, I think the Catholic Church might be partially to blame for that because England, you know, colonized North America, they colonized New England and the middle and southern colonies, and they allowed people to come over and own land. In South America and Mexico and New Spain and all those places, the church owned the land.
Right.
It wasn't. There wasn't this sense of coming over to expand. There wasn't this sense of coming over to make a new life for yourself. And that's one reason New Spain never took off as a colony.
Right.
The Spanish just kind of came over and were like, what can we pull out of this land? And, you know, we'll convert the natives and stuff like that. But they didn't encourage people to come over and start new lives for themselves, you know?
Right.
And so there wasn't that spirit of entrepreneurship that the English colonies had. And, you know, I think that largely it was kind of, you know, the Catholic Church is partially to blame for that. So
yeah, they are. Totally.
You know.
And you would be the expert right now because I haven't set foot in mass in about 25 years now.
Yeah.
20. It's like except for funerals and weddings. That's about it. You know, yeah, the after Passion of the Christ, which was the big controversy, and I guess we'll have to cover that on the show eventually, but I get the feeling maybe other podcasts have done it to death. I don't know.
It might be an inch. I don't know. I mean, I've heard it covered, but it's mostly covered from kind of a cucky liberal Christian point of view.
Oh, yeah, condemning it.
Or kind of counter-signaling it a little bit, like going, well, it is pretty anti-Semitic, you know.
Yeah.
I think Passion of the Christ is a masterpiece film. Or, like, kind of praising it with caveats.
Uh-huh.
Like, I just want to go whole hog and say it's awesome, you know? Like,
right.
I think it's a brilliant film. I saw it 3 times in the theater.
I only saw it once. I just felt like it was a Lucio Fulci movie. It's really so, yeah, and then he did Apocalypto, which was like, it's funny because this movie wasn't even meant to be anything controversial. And yet it was just because of his drunk driving arrest and
sugar tits
incidents.
Jews cause all wars.
Yeah, anti-Semitic statements and stuff.
There's
and
a drop that you can take out of context, by the way.
Right. And he's always had those problems because I remember him that like the gays really hated him years ago.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Because he gave some interview to like a Spanish language paper or something where he made some pretty mean comments that were mean even by early 90s standards. And so he always had that issue. And so he makes this, and a lot of critics like Roger Freeman just condemned it outright. You know, obviously they had their mind made up before they watched it and didn't take it for what it was. And, there's always going to be that. The thing about critics is that these days they're so politically signaling all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and condemning, you know, they have no problem with Polanski, who's like, basically a convicted rapist who never served time.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, no, he's great.
But it's because like, let's face it, pedophilia is the next on the list of things we're going to normalize. Look at
I totally believe that. They're totally gonna
look at Slate. They've been running articles saying I'm a pedophile and I'm not a.
They're gonna try
a molester and then they look this guy up and he's been like soliciting people on boards and stuff.
Yeah, he's wearing like an ankle bracelet and it's like they're gonna try to do that. But then somebody like Mel, because he says things that hurt people's feelings, he's public enemy number one in Hollywood. And I think the worst of that was, I guess there was gonna be a role for him in The Hangover 2. And but half the cast said they'd walk out if he
They were like, we're not going to do it.
But they had no problem with Mike Tyson being in the first film.
Who
rapist?
Yeah, who also was a rapist. It's one of those things where we're very selective about who we, based on your beliefs and whether or not you're on our side.
Right. And it's just it's a one politic town. It's a one political party town, without a doubt. And I think Mel is kind of known as a somewhat conservative voter, although he was very anti George Bush.
He's very anti. I mean, in that way, you could almost say he's alt right.
he's kind of a paleocon.
Yeah, he's paleo. Yeah, he was very anti Iraq War, anti George Bush, but
he's kind of like a Pat Buchanan. Like in a movie star package.
And like back in those days, I was a pro Bush guy. I mean, I thought he was horrible on spending and stuff, but I was more interested in counter signaling, shit libs basically. And so, but these days, like I would be completely anti Bush. And like,
so would I. In fact, I actually asked myself this question, and we don't want to get into the debate because it's going to be old news by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, if it was Hillary that was saying she didn't want war with Russia and no interference in Syria, I would probably end up voting for her.
Yeah.
I actually realized that. It's like, I do think the number one issue is I don't want war with Russia. So it's like, it's funny how certain issues like that can change your perspective on voting. Although I remember Mel Gibson when he was doing Passion of the Christ and Apocalypto, he was promoting it on places. At that time, I was listening to a lot of AM radio, which are mostly right-wing talkers.
Oh, yeah.
And Mel would be on Michael Medved's show. Then he was on Michael Savage's show. It was like the strangest guest appearances and everything.
Sure is going on a lot of Jewish shows for an anti-Semite.
Yeah, exactly. And Medved loved Apocalypto. And I think Gibson then wanted to do a movie about the Maccabees, and he yelled at Joe Etzerhaas about it.
Yes.
We were supposed to be so upset by Joe Etzerhaas's video, but it was really, it's like, you fat slob, you didn't turn in the script. That's why he's yelling at you.
Yeah, no, it was funny because when that whole thing came out, I think it kind of killed any comeback Joe Etzerhaas could have had.
Right.
He's always had these sort of press controversies, but on this, it seemed like Mel had a legitimate gripe with him. It's that he wasn't turning in a fucking script. And Mel was like, what the fuck? I'm paying for you to be over here and you're not fucking working.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's Mel's money. He's spending his money on these budgets. It's like, because I think, what is it, Icon Productions or whatever? That's mm-hmm. him. It's his cash.
It's his company. Like Payback and all that stuff. Like that's his.
Yeah, group. He's spending the money. And I mean, he's got a good business sense in that respect. And so Apocalypto, he had mentioned that he had hired an expert on Mayan culture to be a consultant. And of course, then there was all these history experts of Mayan culture who were disagreeing with what the film portrayed and everything.
And they said there's too much human sacrifice.
Right. And that's a funny and that's a funny thing about when you're doing history films and you have the consultants. No historian from any college, you assemble 50 of them in a room, they can't agree on anything.
No. And especially when it comes to these colonial cultures in America, we don't know shit about them because they got destroyed the moment we came over.
Precisely, because the Spanish came over and gave them a cold and then they fell.
They came over and sneezed on them and they broke out into smallpox and died.
What's funny is watching this movie and I'm thinking, all these protesters on Columbus Day, what culture this was what was lost when Columbus came over?
We lost massive human sacrifice quotas.
Human sacrifice and rape camps and slavery? It's like, this is what you lost?
Well, and like people forget, that the reason Cortez, one of the reasons he was able to destroy the Aztecs was because he was able to unite all the native tribes that hated the Aztecs because they treated them like shit.
Yeah, it'd be a very different thing if people actually read history instead of just believing cartoons and bubblegum wrappers and stuff.
They love the victim narrative, you know.
Yeah, they're totally into that. And it's like, no, it's like there's reasons that those cultures fell. And it's what's cool about this film is he starts off with a quote from Will Durant, who is somebody I want to read more of. I've actually got a shelf of Will Durant books I picked up from a bookstore closing last spring. So I have like all his, you know, the age of, you know, our Oriental heritage and all these other books he wrote. He basically wrote about the world history in like of 2000 years comprehensively. And I guess Gibson is one of those guys who just, you know, has some beers and then reads Will Durant.
Yeah, he chain smokes and drinks.
Chain smokes and he's got a smoking jacket and he's just reading Will Durant and coming up with these, there's a good idea for a film. And, it's cool that he started out that way, and there's a lot of truth to what Will Durant writes, and it's also showing that, you know, they weren't peaceful hippies back then. It's like, it's a pretty violent life.
No, in fact, the entire world was way more violent back then. Like, you know, people being peaceful and all this natives being peaceful, they killed the fuck out of each other.
Yeah. Will Durant actually wrote, I found a quote somewhere, I remember reading this a long time ago, he said that in the history of civilization of the last millennium, or maybe two millenniums, it's like there was about 12 years of global peace where there was no wars going around anywhere. 12 years. That's it. There's always, civilizations always clash.
Yeah.
You know, they're always fighting. There's always war. We've got it now. You know, we had it years ago. It's like, you know, growing up, there was always a war going on somewhere.
But what if Aleppo falls, John?
Aleppo's gone.
if I was Donald Trump, I would have said Aleppo fell back during the Crusades. Let's get back to the issues.
Yeah. but yeah, it's just like if you read the history and everything, you realize, hey, it's always been kind of screwed up.
Oh yeah.
And this film doesn't make it pretty. And I think that's what critics had a problem with. And it's also, it's a straight, interestingly pro-family values, pro-honor film.
Yeah.
If you have not seen it, it involves a village, a very peaceful village of hunters, being enslaved by the big, some supposedly civilized giant Mayan city dwellers who basically just come in and then they have their sacrifices in a pretty harrowing scene. It's funny, all these horror fans will talk about Umberto Lindsay cannibal films, and it's like, they ain't got shit on this stuff.
No, and Mel's movies are always intensely violent. Like,
yeah.
Viscerally violent.
I think he watches a lot of Fulci. I think the man knows his Fulci, and he knows his...
He knows his gore, that's for sure.
He knows his Diodato.
There's that great scene in the movie where there's that chase. I mean, the movie basically becomes Die Hard in the jungle at the end.
Well, it becomes The Naked Prey.
Yeah, The Naked Prey, yeah.
There's tons of callbacks to The Naked Prey in this.
But there's this scene where Rudy Youngblood, the star of the movie, the main character Jaguar Paw, he jumps off a waterfall, and these two Mayan, people chasing it, these two Mayans chasing after him, they jump off the waterfall after him, and one of them lands headfirst on a rock,
yeah,
and his head just breaks apart on the rock.
Yeah.
And I saw this interview with Mel Gibson, and they were like, you know, why do you need to show stuff like that? And he goes, look, I show a guy jumping off a cliff and landing on headfirst on a rock. If you don't want to see it, you can just, you know, it's what's coming. You can close your eyes. But if you want to see it, there it is.
Meanwhile, he's they notice a stack of Fangoria magazines on his sidearm there.
I know it's, but yeah, I mean, I will say there is a perverse part of me that's like, what kind of violence are we going to get out of Hacksaw Ridge? I know it's this movie about like,
oh yeah, well, it's like, yeah, I don't think there's been a film of his that wasn't like super violent.
I mean, except I think the only one is Man Without a Face. That's the exception. But I remember like Braveheart was one of the early like R-rated movies I saw, and it was just rad as shit seeing that. But But yeah, you have these natives being enslaved by the supposedly civilized culture that we, you know, cry over in your Common Core history textbooks. And but it also very much depicts like what Mel sees as diseased culture.
Right.
Like you see like this is a culture that is built around death, and that the movie's called Apocalypto because this culture is coming to an end because it is sick and it is disgusting and it is diseased.
Mm-hmm.
And you even have that scene where, you know, they're kind of being taken like in chains. Well, not really in chains, but you know, they're you know, tied up, being taken to the city.
Right.
And you see that little girl in that village that's been burned down, and she's kind of prophesying about
right.
what's going to happen. You know, you kind of get this, you get this imminent feeling that doom is coming to the civilization. And
right.
you sort of, and of course that's signaled at the end with the arrival of the Europeans in a brief scene.
Right.
But yeah, that's kind of what the movie is about. It's about the doom of a civilization that's eating itself, and then the outside, like the comet, comes and wipes them out.
Well, it's almost like, yeah, what's like the family values kind of is superior to the civilization.
Well, because
so-called civilization,
because
which is an indulgent city. I mean, what was he saying when having the fat kid on top of the temple? You know, the little kid there is like fat.
Oh yeah, he's just like morbidly obese child, you know.
Right, and he's saying like the city people are spoiled and evil and sickening, and boy, no wonder the big city critics didn't like it.
Yeah,
because it's very anti-cosmopolitan.
Well, and like the whole crux of the movie at the end is he's trying to get back to save his wife who's pregnant and giving birth.
Yeah.
And at the end, Jaguar Paw and his family, they see the Europeans and the Mayans chasing him fall to their knees. You know, they're like,
right.
they're like, oh shit, it's Quetzalcoatl or something. I don't
know. Well, they're in awe of spectacle.
Yeah, they see that and they're like, we've never seen anything like this. Jaguar Paw's family is his priority. And
right.
he goes to his family and he's like, we're getting out of here. We're
going
to find
a new home. And
because
of his experience in the city, he already sees a problem with civilization.
Yes.
With the conquistadors.
He's
like,
at them,
going, they're trouble.
So you know what? Like, we figured out this is Jack Donovan's favorite movie.
but yeah, it had he said he in one interview that he made this film because he felt tired of the way action pictures were going, and he thought that the chase genre needed a real kick in the ass, and it's kind of designed that way. And it was quite an experience to see in a theater. Like, I remember just loving it in the theater.
Oh,
and on Blu-ray,
saw it several times in the theater.
Yeah, I wish I had seen it more than once in a theater. I thought it was that good. And just jaw-dropping on a Blu-ray on home video, which is now out of print and going for like crazy money.
Yeah, I was looking for it. I was looking around on Amazon, and the DVD goes for big money. The Blu-ray goes for big money. I don't know what's going on with that.
Right.
But
yeah, they kept it out of print, and
yeah,
it artificially inflated the market. Maybe they'll re-release it again as a 4K or something. I don't think it would look any better because it looks stunningly good on Blu-ray.
I remember the DVD was one of the best-looking DVDs I've ever seen.
Well, he shot it on digital video, and it looks great, unlike like Peter Jackson or Robert Rodriguez. Their stuff looks like garbage when they shoot digital video, and his stuff looks beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like he was proof that this digital video can be the equivalent of film.
Yes.
And it's like, but somebody like Robert Rodriguez, I don't know if they just don't care about color correcting or something, or they just don't care if it looks like shit.
I think, honestly, Robert Rodriguez just just wants to take as many jobs as possible on his movie and get it done as fast as possible. I don't think he really cares.
He's kind of like a Jim Wynorski.
I think, but Mel Gibson's an artist. Like, he really cares about the aesthetics. He wants everything to look right. Like, he is like Michelangelo, you know? Like, I mean,
he does really care. I listen to the commentary, and he puts a lot of thought into everything. He's like, oh, and I cast this guy because he has this type of look, and he had the look I wanted. There's some personal stuff in this movie, too. Gibson co-wrote the script, and one of the city savages basically calls Jaguar Paw Almost, and apparently that's what a bully called Mel Gibson when he was a teenager.
Really?
Yeah, called him Almost, and I guess Mel kept it, carried it over as a Jaguar Paw as sort of his stand-in.
Huh.
There's this guy who has to live up to his father's legacy and everything, which, you know, for Mel, that's a real double-edged sword right there.
Oh, yes.
But I think he gives a lot of great humanity to his protagonist. And it's really depressing to see, like, a village you care about the characters in the beginning, and then they're just, God, they're all, like, all gone.
Oh, that's the film. I love that scene at the beginning where they tell the sort of fat guy that you have to eat the testicles of the pig. That's like the thing you got to do. And it's like okay, male behavior has not changed over the years.
Right. You know? Right. Like locker room. It's like,
yeah, it's like grab him by the pussy, you know,
it's like pussy tape. It's the Trump tape. There you
go. It's one of those things where it's like guys, you know, tricking each other, sort of like bancing each other and having fun,
right.
And you know, making someone do something disgusting because that's what you're supposed to do. You know, I did that with my guy friends, and they did that to me, and you know, it was always a good time. But it's a scene that makes you care about those characters that are all about to die. You know?
And then they just get like death wish revenge.
Oh, it's like
the brutalization halfway through the film, and then you're like, man, you want Jaguar Paw to just kick everybody's ass.
Yeah, that village getting raised, it's better than the village getting raised in Conan, you know?
It's funny because after I saw this, I go, that felt more like a Robert E. Howard movie than anything that's officially adapted from Robert E. Howard's work. It's like it's got all this stuff that Howard would put in about how civilization is inherently evil and sick and falls apart and dies from within and kind of barbarian honor and anarchy are kind of the only way, and they'll always prevail. And
the tribe, the tribe is law, my friend.
Yeah, I remember after seeing it, I was like, "Good Lord, maybe Mel Gibson should be doing a Conan film."
I think Mel Gibson needs to do the film adaptation of The Way of Men.
Yeah, send him a box of bourbon and have him do like, you know, Bran MacMoran or something like
Yes.
Worms of the Earth, directed by Mel Gibson.
Well, and he had a Viking movie he was going to do for a while.
Yeah, it was called Berserker.
And it was,
still talking about it like 3 years ago. And then I'm sure it's not happening because the TV show Vikings is fairly popular. And it might just be seen as a cash in on that. Although I'm sure he would make something so crazy brutal.
It would make Vikings look like shit, I'm sure.
It would probably be my favorite movie of all time if he was able to make it.
It would make Knives of the Avenger look like shit.
Well, you think it was something like The Revenant, which is really trying hard to be a Mel Gibson movie.
Oh, totally. It's like Mel Gibson by way of Tarkovsky or some shit.
Right, right. It's like, but not succeeding because they don't understand the pacing Mel does with his films and stuff.
So, Paul Schrader was being interviewed on Bret Easton Ellis. He was like, the very slow picture. They're making slow pictures at a rate at which we don't have time to watch them all. I was thinking about The Revenant. I was like, yeah, that's a deliberate... Because he was talking about Tarkovsky, but I was like, yeah, The Revenant is totally like, I'm going to make a Tarkovsky movie. You know?
Right. Except make it... God, it was so slow.
Except make it, like, just totally devoid of, you know, interesting meaning. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like, it was one of those films that some people I talked to were blown away by it, but I was in a theater, and I was like, this should be...
I was bored.
A half hour shorter. And it needs about three more tomahawk fights.
It started off really strong, but you have a lot of this, like, we're lying around in the snow, and I don't know. I was just kind of like, I was kind of over it after about 2 hours.
A friend of mine said that Leonardo DiCaprio looked like Orson Welles wandering around.
He really did. Horse. Yeah. Yeah. He did look like Orson Welles. But no, yeah, and, you know, I was kind of thinking, gosh, I like this better when it was called Ivan's Childhood, you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing with Gibson is, like, man, he should be doing, like, a Robert E. Howard type of thing. And
he should. I mean, well, and, like, he's special at, like, you know, Braveheart and that stuff. Like, he's good at that type of movie.
Yeah, he loves the historical detail. He obviously has an interest with battle strategies.
And dead languages.
And yeah, violence. He likes all that stuff. He's not afraid to shoot it in a dead language. Probably the reason I think Tarantino started shooting portions of his film in German for some reason, which I never really understood. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just getting off on that, and it's probably because Mel Gibson was doing it. So he was probably thinking, well, I got to keep up with him, but he can't.
Well, that was the thing about, like, Passion of the Christ. Everybody's like, oh my God, they're using Aramaic, you know? Like,
right, I remember Russell Crowe was like, ripping, I'm a gold man, what are you doing in this, this dead language, you crazy? You know, and it's like, and it ends up being a giant hit, because I think he understood that to make it, he wanted it to look like you're basically, you had cameras back then, filming. I think he wanted a sense of reality. We're not going to get if everybody's speaking British accents, or in Scorsese's overrated film where everybody's speaking in Brooklyn accents.
Oh, I know. Like, hey, Jesus. My name's Peter. My name's Peter, and this is James DeLessa.
Keitel was like, what are you doing?
Hey, Jesus! You can't give up this, Jesus!
It's funny because I used to think Keitel was great. I realize he's really overrated. Because I was watching The Way of the World, a movie he made in 1975 with, like, Sig Shore was the director. And in the film, he's
a music...
Is that the
Cheap Trick movie? Sorry. Never
What's
mind.
That?
Is that the Cheap Trick movie? No,
okay. No, it's Earth, Wind, and Fire. And it introduced Earth, Wind, and Fire to mass audiences because, here's the thing, the movie flopped, but the soundtrack did great. But in it, he's trying to deal with a brother-sister singing group, kind of like Donnie and Marie, which he doesn't like. But he really wants to devote his time to a band called The Group, and The Group is Earth, Wind, and Fire. So he's constantly throughout the film going, I just want to record The Group! You know, because he was the same way in 1975. It was like, The Group! I'm very concerned with The Group! What about The Group's contract? So the whole film, they can't even call them Earth, Wind, and Fire, which is so silly. It's like, yeah, if they're not going to make it, it's because they're called The Group.
Yes.
You couldn't be more generic than that. The Group! And then Earth, Wind, and Fire has like a few speaking lines, like Maurice White and Philip Bailey, and those guys coming, yo, man, this is bullshit. What's going on with our contract? He goes, but you're The Group! I'm working with you guys! You know, and it's like, he's the same way throughout the whole film. He's like angry Harvey Keitel.
Yeah, that was it. I loved it when Jay Moore had he had somebody on his podcast.
He had like Joe, what's his name? He was always on Kumia's show.
Well, he had somebody on
Joe. You know who I'm talking about.
He had somebody and he was talking about Apocalypse Now with them, and they were talking about how Harvey Keitel was on there.
Yeah, yeah, he left the film, or
and he left it. They were like, well, he said. I think the moment he got kicked out was he said you wouldn't treat Al Pacino this way. And Jay Moore just starts going, you wouldn't treat Al Pacino this way! You know, he just starts doing this dead on. And it's like, yeah, that is pretty much how Harvey Keitel acts. You know?
Well, I think that's what's killed Keitel from a lot of roles. Was he's just kind of, yeah, his career it never went the way it was supposed to until like Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Because I remember in Saturn 3, he was dubbed.
You don't know what you're talking about. These girls bust their ass.
It's like somebody asked me, he goes, you don't like Reservoir Dogs, do you? And it's one, Toby Wong, Toby Chong, fucking Charlie Chan. I got Madonna's big dick coming in one ear.
Toby Chu like, coming in the other.
Yeah, it's like,
But Harvey Keitel, I think, tried to, like, make up for it by getting naked in most of his movies.
Yeah,
like
weird.
Bad Lieutenant and The Piano.
Was that, like, a slam at his ex-wife, Lorraine Bracco, or something?
I don't know, but, dude, I remember.
Look what you're missing! Look at me!
I dated a girl who made me watch The Piano, and, oof.
I'm sorry.
That movie's a beating.
I've never seen it.
If you're male, it's a beating. It is a ladies' movie. No offense to ladies out there, but it is a ladies' movie.
Yeah, well, I think Keitel got super overrated fast, and I thought his performance in From Dusk Till Dawn was just horrid. Because he was supposed to be from Arkansas. And he
after what's
like,
what I went through with your mom? You want me to believe in God?
It's like, no, I do not trust in the Lord. He was trying to do like an Arkansas.
I don't trust in the Lord.
Yeah. Oh God, it was such a. That's a bad film anyway. But you know, despite people who claim they like it, I'm like, your standards for movies must not be too high.
It has the best Asian actor of all time, though. That little kid went on to a great career after that.
Yeah. Jesus. It's like that movie. That's when I started to notice that. The whole Tarantino Rodriguez thing didn't have durable wheels.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a problem here. It's like something's about to come off. And yeah, it did a few years later. I was really done with those guys. And, but, you know, with the, has Gibson worked with Keitel?
Maybe in his acting.
Yeah, I was trying to think.
I don't think he's put him in any of his directorial films, but.
And I couldn't think of the last time I've seen Keitel in anything.
It's been a while.
I remember him being interviewed about, what is it, The Path to 9/11, the controversial miniseries.
Oh, yeah.
He played a role in that, and he claims in the interview he didn't know that it was, I was told that it was accurate. And, you know, it's like, I did not realize that it was not accurate. You know.
Oh, apparently. Yeah, he was in The Ridiculous Six, the new Adam Sandler
movie. Oh, yeah, okay.
Which,
so
actually, you know what, he had a hilarious part in that, too.
Well, he might be better for comedy. I think he's better for being funny.
Yeah, I mean, because those voices, I mean, they're funny. Like, you see, that's a funny voice.
No, he's out of place in a lot of movies, you know?
He was in the Grand Budapest Hotel. That's right.
I can't get through those. I can't get through those. The recent movies by that guy, Wes Anderson.
I liked Grand Budapest Hotel quite a bit.
I heard that's better than most.
It is. I thought it was better than, Fantastic Mr. Fox and Moonrise Kingdom.
Fantastic Mr. Fox was like it's like a Pixar movie for NPR listeners.
Yeah, it really was. It was like it was a kids movie that was not for kids.
Right. It was kind of dull.
It was like for people who listen to Ira Glass. You know,
it's the Ira Glass anthropomorphic film. It's absolutely nonsense. But with Apocalypto,
yeah, like, I was about to say we need to get back to Apocalypto.
Yeah, we better talk about this. Too much because that's where that leads you. But with Apocalypto, it's like watching this film again. I had not bought my Blu-ray after seeing it in a theater. You know, but bought the Blu-ray about a year later, and I hadn't watched it since. I'd only seen it once. So watching it a second time, I was pretty amazed by it. If something can hold up almost 10 years later, it's like that definitely speaks highly for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a kung fu teacher I had who was Jamaican. He had rented it, when it came out on video. And he was like, John, I went to Apocalypto. You know what I like about the movie? What is that? And he goes, there were no white people in it.
This wasn't Lewis, was it?
No. It was a kung fu quote-unquote master that I was taking lessons from. And I was like, you do know that white people directed the film and produced it, photographed it and everything. So, but I guess it's, what would it be, Mayan exploitation?
Mayan exploitation, yeah.
Mestizo exploitation. But I said, no, I like the film too, because I just like a lean, mean chase action film.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was like when it came out, I was like, it's like Die Hard in the jungle, yo. Like, I mean, it's just like, it is a chase action movie that is just balls to the wall. Like,
And I still really love it. And it's funny because I would say, you know, if you ask me what are the better action films of the last 15, 20 years, I would say, well, the Raid movies are good. They're not perfect, but they're good. But this, I would say Apocalypto is probably the best chase action film.
I would go so far as to say Apocalypto is my number one movie of the aughts.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could probably throw a movie out there and maybe make me think about it, but for a while after that, I was like, I have yet to see a better movie this decade.
I have only two others that I would probably throw up there, and one is Kung Fu Hustle.
I like this more.
Yeah, and I like City of God.
I like this more, too.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to watch those two.
Well, okay. I'll have to watch City of God again. I loved City of God when I saw it.
Yeah, I was amazed by it.
But Apocalypto, I felt compelled to watch again and again and again.
Right. Well, I'm sure if you talk more about a timeless, you know, Western-oriented film, it's like, it's going to be Apocalypto.
And I think with City of God 2, I thought it was great. And then I saw the next movies by that director, and I thought they fucking sucked.
He never really moved on.
Like,
from that
the Constant Gardener was fucking garbage.
I heard that sucked. Well, Kung Fu Hustle is an extremely Cantonese film.
Yeah, Kung Fu Hustle is a great movie. I watched that one multiple times. Like, right. I've seen that as many times as I've seen Apocalypto. But you know, Apocalypto just it hits me on that like primitive level that is, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like Kung Fu Hustle, I think it's hilarious, and I would definitely put it high in my Audie's movies. Mm-hmm. But this just like it hits that primal spot, you know?
Yeah, no, it's a total visceral film. That's why I was like, God, let Mel Gibson develop a fondness for Robert E. Howard stories.
Yes,
or Carl Edward Wagner,
and maybe Wagner's we can stop fucking stories. Seeing a post every day about how when's the King Conan with Arnold movie happening?
God,
fuck
why,
off!
Why would you want that?
Every and time I see one of those posts, I'm like, and John will chime in 3.
Yeah,
two,
I always did.
I'm like, I don't even bother saying anything. So now I'm like, John's got it.
And I said, Universal dropped the option. Okay, I'm gonna list you all you weirdos wanting a King Conan film with a 70-year-old Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yes,
swinging a sword. Arnold's a box office dud.
He's
had
dead.
Nothing but bombs since coming back. In fact, Sabotage was somehow the biggest money loser the year it was released. It was the biggest bomb that year. Universal dropped the option 2 months ago. They had no interest in renewing. It was actually the result. Somebody else on one of those groups chimed in and said, what happened was Universal wanted the Terminator rights. They didn't get them. Paramount got them. So then they got the Conan rights because that was the next best thing, they thought. And they thought, well, if Terminator's a hit, we'll do King Conan. Well, Terminator Genesis was not a hit.
Nope.
And didn't make over $100 million in the U.S., and that's important. And so no Conan because that film would probably cost about $90 to $100 million to make. You know, even though it'd be shot mostly in front of a green screen with a very aging, needed to be doubled every 2 seconds actor, you know, it's like Schwarzenegger is not in the shape he used to be in.
No.
It can't do something like that. Nobody wants Steve Reeves didn't try to do old Hercules. You know, he had no interest. It's like, come on. And Arnold will sit there and act like they're still going because Arnold can never admit he's been defeated by reality. No, women don't want to see him, and you need the female box office to make his stuff hit.
No, and they fucking hate him. Women hate him.
They think he's
Arnold.
A creep. He's a fucking creep.
Like, I mean, I'm sorry, but when Arnold was like, I disavow Donald Trump for his treatment of women.
Oh my God.
It was like, everybody was like, you of all people have no fucking room to talk. You know?
What's funny is I got no headline traction at all.
No, because everybody was like, because the press knew that would only hurt. That would only help
Hillary.
Donald Trump. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Eating is not cheating.
I think that's wrong. Excuse me while I impregnate my maid.
I never say things like grab them in the pussy. I say grab them in the ass.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, just like that.
I say do cocaine while I lift weights and they blow me.
believe me, the court case from the 90s about him being a sexual harasser on sets is totally true.
Oh, it's totally true. It's dude,
like 19 women were given legal depositions. It's totally fucking true.
Unlike Mel Gibson, who is a total gentleman.
He's a gentleman.
He grows amazing beards and he runs into people on hikes in Ireland.
Yeah. was that not like the best headline
yeah,
ever?
It was like... couple runs into Mel Gibson while hiking in Ireland.
It's like
never...
Sasquatch. You know?
And he's got this giant beard.
Yeah, because it's for some movie he's doing that's set in the 19th century. But
Which will be a masterpiece. Let's just
yeah, I mean, he's one of those... I always liked him as an actor, simply being a Mad Max fan. And
oh, and like, you know...
Road Warrior.
Mad Max and, you know, him being, like, crazy in Lethal Weapon and... You know?
Yeah, and it's like even though the Lethal Weapon sequels are pretty terrible, I always enjoyed his work mainly because
he makes them watchable. Like
right, he's one of the reasons they're watchable. And then for his recent action movies where he's the lead, like Get the Gringo, and I'm looking forward to seeing Bloodfather.
Yeah.
He's like in this crazy old man phase of action movies where he's kind of awesome because he just looks like a crazy old man that does like bicep curls all the time.
And I really do think that even though Mad Max Fury Road was a great movie, I think he should have been in it.
I think it was probably offered to him and he just said, I can't at my age. I just can't do it.
That could be. I think that movie would have worked great with him. Even though
it would have, but he was at the premiere and, you know, was like grabbing George Miller throughout the film and laughing. And, but I think he was just like, because I think that was a long shoot and I think working with Miller is probably a tough shoot. So he probably just didn't want to be tied down and shooting it for 6 months or whatever.
Yeah.
And he probably knew it was too physically tough for him because, you know, he's been doing testosterone pills and the whole hormone, quote unquote, hormone therapy like Stallone to try to keep looking young and looking fit in movies. And something like a Mad Max film probably would have been too tough for him. You know, he was going to do it as late as the 1998.
Yeah. No, he was. I remember hearing about Mad Max Fury Road in the late 90s, like, and that Mel was going to do it, you know.
And there were these stories, and Stu would probably confirm them if they're true, that, the Interceptor was seen being taken around Melbourne, like they were getting all the old vehicles out of the shops or whatever, wherever they'd stored them. Mm-hmm. So it was talk. I think back then they were talking about filming them in Australia. Yeah. And then it just didn't happen that way. Then it became South Africa or wherever the hell.
South Africa.
Yeah, South Africa. But the funny, the best Mel Gibson thing you could do is that YouTube clip of him leaving a angry, pissed off phone message to some Russian girl he was dating. Because I'm sure he knew that was going to go well.
She was going to get raped by a pack of...
Yeah. Or we don't even say it. Well, you and I don't say it on the show.
This isn't the Daily Show, though. We can't say it.
No, we can't.
We're not using funny fake names.
But the best thing he said was, I'm gonna burn your house down and you're going to blow me while I do it.
No, he goes, I'm going to burn your house down and you're going to smile and blow me.
Yes! He was the king of all men when he said that.
Oh my God. I was like, you know, building an altar. Oh my God.
So that's what the pre-Vatican II Catholics were like.
Exactly. We were the Borghese family or whatever.
but yeah, he's quite a character and interesting. And I think probably a lot smarter than he's given credit for. And I've heard the same thing about Eastwood. Everybody tries to act like Eastwood is some dumb asshole or whatever. And
you know. I thought when you bring up Eastwood, you know, Pauline Kael always admitted she hated Eastwood movies because him and Steve McQueen reminded her of men she hated growing up. And
right.
I think a lot of film critics see guys like Mel. They see guys like Clint, and they see the guy that they kind of wish they could be when they were growing up, and they sort of get, or the guy they sort of envied or wish they could have been with, and they sort of they hate them because of that. They represent something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's
primal.
A total David Lee Roth, you know, the recent Elvis Costello gets better reviews is because music critics look like Elvis Costello.
It, absolutely.
It was totally true, because I'd much rather listen to Van Halen than Elvis Costello's stuff. So it's... There's always that jealousy aspect, and then I think Warren Murphy, who had worked with Eastwood on the Iger Sanction, he said that Eastwood was a much smarter and more cultured man than the media would give him credit for. Like he could, you know, he speaks Italian.
I think hardcore Catholics like that, I think in general, are more cultured and interesting than most people.
Like, and but Gibson quoting Will Durant, I can't tell you any other movie I've seen that quotes Will Durant.
Of course not, because other movies are made by people who don't read.
Right, exactly.
But I think we're going to wrap it up. John, what do you think, speaking of critics?
Yeah, that's all I can say. You know, the interesting thing about Apocalypto is I don't think I've seen the cast in anything else since this.
Yeah, I think I remember seeing Rudy Youngblood's name in the tabloids a few times.
Really?
But, yeah, I think he had a few, things here and there. He's been in a couple of movies since, but nothing really of note. I think I saw him with some, romance stuff in the tabloids occasionally, but I don't think he's really been in anything of note since then.
Well, I hope nobody got blacklisted because of who they worked with.
Right, I know. But, you know, it's kind of like... ethnic film. I mean, well, was it Raul Trujillo? He's been in some stuff. He was in Sicario.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He was in Riddick, Cowboys and Aliens.
Movies I haven't seen.
He was in Terrence Malick's The New World, which, you know, of course would come naturally. And so
a lot
of Indians.
Well, that's like how John Carter hired all these people who had been in the TV show Rome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something like three cast members from Rome. I'm like, what? So I guess the filmmakers were fans, but But yeah, I haven't seen a lot of these actors anywhere else. But I thought Rudy Youngblood would be a huge star after
you
this.
Thought you would think so, but yeah, he's only been in a couple movies since then.
Strange, but it's not like Hollywood knows what to do with the physically gifted.
Well, and it's kind of like that that whole thing with what's his name, Samuel L. Jackson. He yeah. said that Hollywood, you know, likes its. He said it in a much more vibrant way. But that right. Hollywood likes its ethnic actors, and they have one or two they go to, and that's it. And like yeah, for black
Fred,
people,
that's
that
right. Fred Williamson had told me that it was just yeah. like they like that one. They want the one black actor who gets all the black roles. You get the one Chinese actor who gets all the Chinese roles or mm-hmm. Asian roles because Hollywood doesn't care if they're Korean or Japanese or whatever.
Yeah, it's they just have no imagination. So
right. There's no imagination. There's no attempt to even make new stars.
Back in the day, Rudy Youngblood would have been in a lot of Charles B. Pierce movies.
Right, he would have been a contract player. Yeah. Signing with Warner Brothers is Rudy Youngblood. He'll be our drive-in secondary star with Charles B. Pierce.
Charles B. Pierce for the Southern
Return
market.
Return to Boggy Creek.
Because was it Charles B. Pierce did all those like Indian movies, like
Greyhawk or whatever the hell,
Winter yeah. Eagle or something. I don't know.
He did a movie with Vikings that like Lee Majors is a Viking, the Norseman. It's not too good.
Ah.
And he was just like a kid. We had talked about him in the Town of the Dreaded Sundown episode, yeah. but it's like he had just done like a kid show in Arkansas, and it was almost like a self-taught filmmaker in many
yeah,
ways.
Yeah, he really was. He was, you know, he was an auteur of the region.
They would have tried to make him a Cesar Romero. Rudy Youngblood's this fiery Latino for the drive-in.
He's a spicy Latino.
Yeah, so there you go. Hey, ladies, he's available. You know?
So let's give our ratings for Apocalypto. Mm-hmm. Stuart wanted to give his rating.
Yeah.
And he gives it 9 castrated pigs out of 10.
Right.
So what would you give it, John?
I'd give it 9 faceless jaguar victims.
Yeah, that's a good rating. I would give it 9 shattered skulls at the bottom of the water. I mean, not 9, I'm sorry. I want to give it 10 shattered skulls at the bottom.
I hope you
would
give it 10 bone clubs.
10 bone clubs. I'll give it 10 water births out of 10.
Shit. Good one there, Havisham.
Thank you, jazz hands. I give it a 10 out of 10. I think it's one of the best movies of the aughts, and I say it's the best movie. I might be able to be persuaded on that, but it's whenever I think of my favorite movie of that decade, it's this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mel Gibson is a genius, and I can't wait for Hacksaw Ridge in November. We'll probably do an episode on it because it's one of those movies that will probably be worth seeing in the theater.
I'm sure it will be, and I mean, this would be in my top 5 of the double lows, probably top 3.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be.
Easily. It's not like there was a lot of great stuff in that decade.
I don't see it dropping below, like, top 3 for me if you were to say, like, okay, this movie, that movie. Like, you know, like, Zodiac's up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Kung Fu Hustle, you brought that up. That's a great one.
Yeah.
You know, you brought up some other good ones, but I like this one.
Yeah, Zodiac would be in my top 5.
Yeah,
Zodiac. City of God, it's, you know, it's kind of back and forth on those. Mm-hmm. And it just depends on what I saw this year, what I pulled off the shelf and rewatched.
And, of course, Alien Resurrection. No, I'm kidding.
All right.
But
Predators versus Aliens.
Oh, God, that one was really bad.
Holy hell, I couldn't believe how bad that was. That was like 20th Century Fox was literally saying, we don't give a shit anymore.
They were like, let's take an OC script, but put Predators and Aliens in it.
Let's make this like Fred Olin Ray was turning in the Aliens movie.
So, but anyway, so short episode this week, but... we'll have another one next week. Stu will be back. We'll be the triumvirate. We'll be back. And, you know, visit us at MidnightMovieCowboys.com. Be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. That's what really helps us even more than donations. So, anyway, do you have anything to add, John?
Remember, we're on the Phantom Sway.
The website. Phantom Sway. Thank you.
Very interesting site. Keep checking it out. They've got all sorts of interesting posts on there. And, you mentioned iTunes, and I think we kind of gave up on the whole YouTube dream.
Yeah, but, YouTube. YouTube's too. There's too much shit going on with that. You know.
Yeah, well, they never turned a profit, so.
Mm. Opposite of that. We got showed a few times.
But yeah, otherwise, definitely seek this film out.
Yes, it's pretty, yeah, I've meant to mention it goes for a pretty penny these days, but you could probably, if you hunt around your used bookstores, you'll find it.
Used bookstores, pawn shops has become one of my favorite DVD collecting.
Oh,
sites.
yes, pawn shops are great. Don't forget your pawn shops, people. They
do not collector price anything. They don't.
No,
care.
They just go dollar a DVD. You know, they don't sit there and go like, we got this one. We'll charge for the. You know, go around and look for it. You'll be able to find it. It's not in print on Blu-ray or a DVD, but you should be able to find it if you sniff around.
Seek it out. It's a very, very one of the best films of the last 20 years you can watch.
As a wise man once said, I might have been Jesus. I don't know. Seek and ye shall find.
So. It was either Jesus or it was W.C. Fields.
Yes, it was one of the two.
Right.
Very closely related. All right. And with that, I think we'll say adios.
And I'll say Megadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast. To leave feedback and show suggestions, email us at midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like our Midnight Movie Cowboys show page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and feel free to leave us a review. Listen to us on Stitcher.com or the Stitcher Radio app. Want to help the show out? Visit MidnightMovieCowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate link. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Our personal links are on the right side of our homepage. See y'all next time. Yeah.